Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man of uncommon intelligence who has brought it to bear, thanks be to God, for our country's national security for decades, mostly in the office of the Secretary of Defense, but now as a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute. His name is Dr. Harold Rode. He is a frequent contributor to this program, for which I am very grateful, but never more so than at this moment, when his personal, firsthand, intimate understanding of the nature of the Iranian regime and the people that it has misruled for 40 years is so desperately needed, especially in the face of the kind of commentary and analysis, or what passes for it, that is much in evidence in the aftermath of the elimination at President Trump's direction of Qasem Soleimani, the major general who commanded the Quds Force since 1998. We're going to talk with Harold Rode about him, about his demise, what may come next, and what we need to be doing about it. But before we do all of that, let me just say formally and personally, heartfelt Happy New Year to you, Harold Rode. I consider the elimination of Soleimani to be a very happy thing, with all of the challenges that it represents. But I just want to say to you how much I appreciate your service to our country over many years, and the chance to visit with you about this terribly important topic, about which you have such deep knowledge at this particular moment in time. So thank you for joining us, and thank you for taking a full hour to really drill down on what we're confronting now and what we best be doing to make it come out right. So Harold, I'd like to start in this particular interview by kind of a level setting on the nature of Iran, the culture. You've studied this closely, you've lived among its people, you have been a duty expert on the subject for both the Secretary of Defense and the White House in the past. What makes the Ayatollahs tick? And what are they thinking at the moment, as best you can tell?
What makes them tick? This is a group of extremist Ayatollahs that the Ayatollah Khomeini hated. He's the one who founded the Iranian Revolution in 1979. Why did he hate them? Because these people running the country believe that they can provoke a conflagration with America, with Israel. And as things are going bad for them, their Messiah, called the Mahdi, will reappear and save them. That is Khomeini, the guy who is the supreme leader, or the Führer, if you wish, of Iran. And that's the people around him. And Iran is a very sophisticated country. They say anything or do anything to get what they want done. They lie, they cheat. Look, they're not doing it only to us. Iranians have difficulty at times understanding themselves. They know that their fellow Iranians don't tell them the truth. They're not trying to lie. All they're trying to do is protect themselves. So it's very hard to understand Iran unless, I really believe this, you've had some time living in the culture. And in my case, I feel very fortunate that I was able to study in a university in a town called Mashhad, a city called Mashhad in northeastern Iran, during the early and mid stages of the Iranian Revolution. And that's why, besides my book study, that's why I think I can have some interesting insights into that culture.
Well, I have interacted with you enough on this program and elsewhere to know that that's so, Harold. And you sort of shifted from when you We're talking about the Twelvers, as they call themselves, I guess, the ruling Ayatollah and his coterie, of whom Qasem Soleimani was a very important member. You also switch gears, I think, to talk various points there about the Iranian people. The Iranian people have been pretty clear in recent months that they are sick to the teeth of this gang and have taken to the streets. Many of them have been killed for doing so by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps or its Basiji thugs. Harold, how do things stand at the moment in terms of popular support for this regime? Has it been affected by the demise of Soleimani?
Two things. There are a whole bunch of people in Iran who see him as charismatic or saw him as charismatic. But from my experience, I'm pretty convinced that the overwhelming majority of people see him as a right-hand man of Khomeini, the supreme leader, who, together, that group of people, is making the Iranian people suffer. It is squeezing them. It is stealing money from, robbing them blind. They've got money galore, the people who are running the place, while the common people suffer. What they want more than anything, I'm totally convinced of this, is to be put out of their misery. The Iranian people do not have a basic hatred of the United States. They, in fact, would like to join, shall we say, the community of international community of nations. And the support for Trump, from my understanding, is actually quite high. Please, President Trump, help us take out this regime. That's the bottom line.
Harold Rode, that is a point to which I think we're going to return at several junctures in this conversation. But before we do, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to ask you about the extent to which the millions of people, we're told, that were in the street mourning the passing of Soleimani are representative of the people of Iran more generally, or if, as you say, they may have a strong attachment to this regime and maybe even its ideology, but they are at odds with many, many, many of their countrymen who want to be rid of this whole gang. We'll talk about that and the strategic implications of this matter for U.S. policy with Dr. Harold Rode, a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute and longtime duty expert on Iran and much of the Middle East in the Office of the Secretary of Defense.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined by Dr. Harold Rode for this full hour of a true intelligence briefing on what is afoot in Iran at the moment and, as a result, elsewhere in the region and what may be coming to a theater near you, including here in the United States, perhaps. Harold Rode is a distinguished senior fellow at the Gatestone Institute. If you have not checked out the Gatestone Institute's materials, I strongly commend it to you, especially Harold's, but they have other terrific contributors, and it's always worth reading. Let me just say, Harold, I'm interested as much as anything in your sense of how the Iranian regime and the Iranian people are viewing what went down when President Trump took out Soleimani, and specifically whether there's an important difference between the two, the outlook of the government itself as opposed to the popular view.
Let's start with the government. The Iranian government now, since President Trump has stood up and shown that he is prepared to use force to stop the Iranians from killing Americans, the Iranian government is between a rock and a hard place. What do I mean? In the Middle East, and especially in Iran in this case, people look and bow down to power. It's not how they feel or whatever like this. They're afraid, and they got to be on the winning side. It's essential. If the Iranians do not react to what, on one hand, to what the president has done by the elimination of Qasem Soleimani, then they look weak, that Iranian government. The message to the Iranian people, if they're weak, then you rise up, then you try to overthrow your government. So on one hand, they're afraid of looking weak. On the other hand, if they provoke the United States by doing something awful or provoke Israel, that could provoke. President Trump said that he has 52 targets and he is absolutely prepared to attack, to, and will basically destroy the infrastructure of Iran, and that will be the end of the regime. So it's a dilemma. The regime doesn't know what to do. They're scared. In a situation like this, when people are scared, they can make dumb decisions. One thing which is very important here, that the people at the top, we know, believe that by provoking a conflagration, they can make their messiah come down and save them. But this goes against Iranian culture. Iranian culture is based on patience. You wait until you have the opportunity to get what you want done, and then you strike. But if they wait, they look weak. On the other hand, if they strike the United States, if they strike Israel, and they're taken out, they lose. So they don't have an answer to this problem right now.
But there's no question in your mind, Harold Rode, that one of the takeaways from this incident was that it has impressed the leadership of Iran that Donald Trump and the United States is powerful, and they are not, and that there will be consequences for their behavior if they continue this kind of provocative action against the United States. So this is an important insight, because I think a lot of people are, in this country particularly, less knowledgeable about Iran than you, are persuaded that the Iranians are very powerful, we're being told, that they are very much with the upper hand. Not so.
No, it's not. Let me just give you an example that from when we liberated Iraq way back when in 2003. A lot of our analysts in the American government and in the media were concerned with the elite Iraqi Republican Guards. And oh my God, can we stand up to them? Well, the moment that reality struck and we were fighting them, our problem was we have such power that we could so easily eliminate them all. And we just didn't want to kill everybody for the sake of killing. And we're in the same situation right now. The Iranians are no match for the United States of America. Nobody's a match for the United States of America. Even though, shall we say, a previous administration tried to, let's say, destroy the military might of our country. Nobody can stand up to America. Iran is like a one-year-old compared to the United States, who is strong, robust, and vibrant. Can Iran inflict minor damage on the United States? Probably. But it's like Gulliver's Travels. Gulliver was shot by all the Lilliputians with these tiny, tiny arrows, which were like pins. Pins sting, but they can't, in the end, stop the United States. And that's why I was so impressed and so proud that President Trump finally used force and, shall we say, got the Iranians' attention. And he took out, with Qasem Soleimani, the absolute right person to do it.
When you look at the practical implications of this, Harold, one of the questions that occurs is, I'm a little less sanguine than you as to the limits on Iranian ability to harm us or our vital interests. But whether or not we can deter them from taking such steps, you've introduced this idea that fear of a powerful adversary determined to use their power, which is something that I think they've not always sensed from us, can have a deterrent effect all by itself. I wanted to ask you about one of the things that has been really weighing on me since this attack, since the elimination of Qasem Soleimani specifically, but more generally in the run-up to that. How have the Iranians perceived the critics, particularly the political opposition in our country, as they're making their calculations as to what they can get away with?
Interesting question. They're relying on a lobby in Washington to tell them what is going on. That lobby includes former Iranians and people in the highest levels of the Democratic Party, for example, former Secretary of State John Kerry and a few others. And they have been advising the Iranians that just hold on. We Democrats are going to win in 2020, and Trump won't be president. And if you hold on long enough, we will go back to the Obama policy by giving you whatever you want. We will give in. And the Iranians believed that until President Trump took out Qasem Soleimani. Now they're not so sure. They look at us, those in the United States, who say, come, let us reason together. You can reason with the Iranians. They think like we do, as useful idiots. That's the bottom line. They see the American academic establishment, the media, as useful idiots. I do want to say one other thing. The best way, from my perspective, that you can learn about a culture is living in the country and living among its people. I am now 70 years old and retired from the Pentagon 10 years ago. When I retired, being 60, I was, to the best of my knowledge, the youngest person who in the government who dealt with Iran, who worked on Iran for the government, who had lived there, who was not a native-born Iranian. I was born in Philadelphia. I'm not Iranian. I'm not of Iranian origin. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the people, a lot of the government analysts that we have, they have not lived in Iran, and they don't understand the people. And these are the people who in the American, in our establishment, which is basically mostly the Democrats, who have behind the scenes been making decisions. They don't understand Iran. They honestly don't have the ability to do so.
I'm not sure that they have a terribly good grasp of human nature more generally, to be honest with you, or even common sense, let alone a survival instinct. I mean, many of the policies, Harold Rode, that we've critiqued over the years on this program with you and others have been born of a sort of crazy notion that, as you say, we can sit down and reason together with people who, in the case of at least the ruling clique in Iran, are determined to kill us. That's, I think, takeaway from this whole experience is that Soleimani was just one of the engines of the killing, but there are others that are at their disposal. And Harold, we're going to have to pause here in just a moment, but I did want to just set the predicate for the next conversation by saying, as you look at the Iranian options, proxies are clearly a weapon of choice, whether it's Hezbollah or Hamas or whether it's Al-Qaeda or others that they've used over the years, the Houthi militia, and so on. There are ways in which, at least in the past, they have been able to claim what's been called plausible deniability by virtue of them having done it at some remove. Of late, at least until the Soleimani takedown, they were becoming more brazen about it, the attack rather directly on Saudi Arabia comes to mind. But when we come back, I want to just get your thoughts on, as the Iranians, knowing them as you do, the regime, look at their options, what would you guess, given their assessment of the divisions in our own country and the possibility of defeating Donald Trump next year and all that, maybe the ones that they are most likely to try to implement? We'll hit that topic and much more with Dr. Harold Rode straight ahead.
More with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're visiting with Dr. Harold Rode, one of my mentors over many years, very valued colleague and dear friend, who has served his country in a variety of important capacities, including in the famed Andy Marshall Office of Net Assessment in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. But Harold, I want to get to the specifics here. Given the fear that you say the Iranian regime has, and given the dangers they now must assume exist if they were to take on the United States rather directly, what are they thinking about how to engage us so that they save face and do harm? Is it through proxies or through cutouts of some other kind? How do you anticipate they're calculating their next steps?
Well, let's start with the proxies and what's the situation they're in. Soleimani had gone from Baghdad to Beirut before he came back to Baghdad, and let's say met his 72 versions or something like this in paradise. Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is nothing more than an Iranian fifth column. The hatred towards Hezbollah throughout Lebanon is not publicly expressed. Even Shiites, Hezbollah is a Shiite organization. Even many Shiites are opening their mouth and saying that Hezbollah, the Iranian government fifth column, is destroying them. Let's look at Iraq. Iraq is the largest Shiite entity besides Iran. You just had a vote in the government where they, in the Iraqi parliament, where they, on the surface, if you read what is in the press, in the Western press, oh my God, the Iraqi parliament voted to expel the American forces from Iraq after what they did to Qasem Soleimani. Well, what is interesting is that the only people who came to the parliament were by and large the Iranian-backed Shiite delegates, and of the Iraqi Arab Sunnis and the Kurds did not come to parliament that day to vote on this. So it, on the surface, it appears the parliament said this, that, and the other thing. And I was listening earlier today to Iranian-backed Iraqi officials and clerics saying vicious, vicious things against the United States and threatening us with everything in the book. So the Iraqi government, unfortunately, has become an Iranian proxy. The same is true with Yemen. All these people threaten. But I want to say something. In the Middle East, when people do things, they don't talk about them. If I say, Frank, God forbid, you and I are having a public fight, and there are always people watching it. And if I say, I look at everybody in the crowd and I say, hold me back or I'm going to shoot, kill, whatever, Frank Gaffney. In Middle Eastern terms, when you say these things, what people understand is, please hold me back because Frank could kill me and I won't be able to do anything about it. When people talk this way, it is a sign of weakness. And that shows how scared the Iranians are. They don't know what to do. The Iranian government, to me, is like a deer in the head, caught in the headlights. It's in shock because Trump finally stood up and showed what America is capable of doing.
And willing to do. All right, Harold, so stay with Iraq for a moment. As you were saying earlier, the Iranian people have been standing up to their government. So have the people of Iraq, have they not? And it's not just been the Sunnis and Kurds. It's been the Shia as well. And they have been responsible, as I understand it, these protests in the streets that have been going on for months. And again, quite a number of them have been killed by the Iraqi forces. But they have as well precipitated, well, some change in their government, at least, and potentially a quite far-reaching one. Is that right?
Yeah. Let me give you an Iraqi Shiite proverb about Iranians. It is, when you break open the bone of a Persian, let's say SH.T comes out. In other words, the Arab Shiites in Iraq hate Iran. They see it as a big brother that supposedly will help them if they got a fight with the Sunnis, which has been a perpetual fight. But on the other hand, the Iranians are dragging them down. What the Iraqi Shiites have been doing, Arab Shiites, to the Iranians in the riots, in burning Iranian consulates in the two Shiite holy cities of Najaf and Karbala, which are in Iraq, and they burned down the Iranian consulate in Basra, which is an overwhelmingly Shiite city. This is Iraqi Shiites against Iranian Shiites.
So, Harold, if you're watching this play out then, and obviously we're doing it from some remove and without your understanding of the nuances and the culture and so on, it looks as though the Iranians are getting their way in terms of seizing government control in Iraq, displacing the United States, perhaps closing the U.S. embassy, and otherwise turning Iraq into the full-on satrapy that Soleimani had in mind and ostensibly was in the process of accomplishing through a coup d'etat. Is that, in fact, likely, as you see it, or is the will of the Iraqi people now across the sectarian divides such that that ain't going to happen?
In order for the ain't going to happen to happen, it is essential that any provocation that the Iranians or their proxies do, that President Trump respond accordingly. Go after one of his 52 targets that he came up with. I don't know. I have no idea what the targets are. But they must continue to show, America must continue to show that it means business. And once the people keep seeing over once, twice, three times, that America is the powerful one and Iran is the failure and Iranian proxies are the failure, you will see more and more riots, demonstrations, anger, frustration, hatred of the Iranians and their proxies all over the Middle East. That's the way it works. They bow down to power. This is not how we do things in the United States, but it's how they see the world.
This is such an important point, and it's so seemingly lost on most of us. But again, it's common sense. It's the law of the jungle, I guess, the survival of the fittest. In order to ensure that you're not ground up, you want to be on the winning side, and if there's evidence that it's not the Iranians, and it is the U.S., I think you're absolutely right. You're going to see increasing agitation on the part of those who are opposed to the Iraqi government as well as the Iranian one. And Harold, as you're looking at this, again, part of the context is the question of this Islamic State operation. What's your reading on what happens if the United States either withdraws forcefully, you know, at the insistence of the government of Iraq, let's say, or simply has to divert from engaging in continuing the pressure on ISIS in order to do force protection in a dangerous setting inside Iraq?
Well, it's simple. America will, if they do what you said here, America will be demonstrating weakness. And in the Middle East, that's the end. That means that ISIS will come back strongly And that means that the Iran and its proxies will come back strongly. Imagine this is all like a cancer patient. In 2015, long before Soleimani was anywhere near as powerful as he is today, the Israelis wanted to take Qasem Soleimani out. And the Americans got wind of it, and Obama basically told the Iranians what Israel was going to do. I forget where I read this. I read this today in a place I was reading. The stuff I read is all stuff that is tried and tested that I respect. My point is that the longer you wait, the worse the problem is going to be. Let me just give you an Iranian proverb, which works for the Arabs as well, on power. In Persian, the language, national language of Iran, there is no word for a or the. You know from other contexts. I remember seeing this in demonstrations when the Shah was falling in Iran. People were yelling, "We don't want Shah." Now, from that phrase, the Shah was the ruler of Iran. From that phrase, you don't know whether it's the Shah that they had or any old Shah. And what happens after they were yelling, "We don't want the Shah," the government or some forces coming in were coming in and beginning to beat the heads of the demonstrators. Some were my fellow students. And the chant changed ever so slightly, too. "We don't want Shah. Why do we want another? We have one already." My point is they saw that power at that moment was the Shah had power and they were bowing down to it. They didn't want trouble. If we give in, if we leave Iraq, if we don't stand up, it is saying we are afraid. And remember, in the Middle East, there's no such thing as compassion as we understand it. If somebody looks weak, you pounce on them, you destroy them, you hit them. And that's what they will do to us if we withdraw. Now is the time for America, with the slightest provocation, to do Qasem Soleimani part two.
Amen. Harold Rode, pause with me one more second. We'll be right back for our final installment with Dr. Harold Rode of the Gatestone Institute and the Office of the Secretary of Defense in his previous incarnation. We'll be right back with more right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to our fourth and final installment of this very timely and very important conversation with Dr. Harold Rode, one of our country's preeminent experts on Iran, who has joined us via phone from Israel. Harold, I wanted just to use the fact that you're there as an opportunity to have you speak specifically to a point that the Iranian government has incessantly made, which is that we're all being run by a bunch of Zionists in a conspiracy to take over the world, and that therefore their endless chants about death to Israel, the little Satan, and death to America, the great Satan, is both justified and the natural order of things. Specifically, if you can speak to the question that some think an attack on Israel may be the response that the Iranians may be contemplating now, so that they're not going at the United States directly. Could you just address sort of the Israel component of this?
Well, let me tell you that when Soleimani was taken out, there were discussions here and there. When you talk with people on the streets, and Israel's an open society, you can talk with anybody about anything. There, for about the first few hours or so, there was concern of how the Iranians would respond. There is a ski resort on the Syrian border and Lebanese border in the Golan Heights that the Israelis closed. It was only for one day. Life is normal here since the first day this happened. Are people particularly worried? I think they understand. They have tremendous faith in their military. There is an awesome chief of staff here by the name of Kochavi, who has been preparing for this sort of thing. I know, really, I'm not a military guy. I'm a contextual history guy. But I can tell you that from what I understand, the Israelis have an extremely good understanding of where their problems are militarily and how to deal with them. And I think that the people of Israel have the confidence in their government that they do know how to deal with this. I frankly wouldn't want to be Iran if I had to deal with the Israeli military. If you remember some months ago, the Israelis went into Iran and took out their entire nuclear archives and brought them out and shared them with us here in the United States. And Israel is unbelievably capable. From my experience with people who've been following this issue, I can tell you that they've been much more interesting here than with, unfortunately, a lot of government officials in the United States, because Israel understands that they have potentially could be a life or death issue having to deal with Iran. I think that if Iraq is foolish enough to attack Israel, it will pay a price that they will regret. And maybe the Iranian people will be liberated from the tyranny.
But again, Harold Rode, one of the things that is so troubling about the situation Israel now faces, not just in Syria as a result of the Iranians moving forces and equipment and arming Hezbollah there, but also there are estimated to be 100,000 plus rockets and missiles now in Hezbollah's hands in southern Lebanon, capable of ranging the entirety of Israel, some of them apparently increasingly precise weapons that would cause incalculable harm to Israel. And obviously, please God, none of this eventuates, but could, in this scenario we're discussing, the Iranian response be opting to exercise the Hezbollah missile option against Israel? Especially if, again, Harold, you said yourself that their conviction, the leadership's conviction, is that they want to bring on a conflagration that will end with the return of the Mahdi.
Well, it's a good point, Frank. I buy what you're saying, but we can only say the history that we have up to now is that the Iranians haven't done it. And they've had those missiles in place for over 10 years, and they've improved them for over 10 years. I believe, though I have no way of really knowing, that the Israelis have a very good idea of what's where and what to do. They don't have to worry about what a president like Obama would have done to them if they acted. But Israel's democracy, and democracies don't want to go to war unless they have to. And as a result, I can't know. Nobody can know. I would rely on the Israeli ability to take care of itself. Does that mean it's going to be easy? No. Does that mean that some missiles could get through? They sure could. But frankly, I'm any more than that, I'm incompetent because I'm not a military guy.
I think what you've said is sufficient for the moment. Let's close this conversation, Harold Rode, with just a recap on what should the United States be doing right now to maximize the deterrent effect on the Iranians?
I think it's essential that the Iranians, when they test us, and they are going to be testing us, if they dare touch one American or one American ally, that I guess would include Saudis, the United Arab Emirates, or Israel, that America uses its power to simply respond with power and show the Iranian regime, and more importantly, the Iranian people, that you don't mess with the United States. And if you do, you're finished.
Harold, in calibrating this response, the president has introduced the idea in the past 24 hours or so that not only would the United States respond and respond decisively against 52 targets, he said, but that the response would be disproportionate. There's a lot of, you know, sentiment in certain circles that, oh, no, it has to be proportionate. And that even the killing of Qasem Soleimani was disproportionate. Knowing the mindset of the people we're dealing with, where do you come down on that idea?
The idea of proportional response is what you do in a culture where you negotiate, where you compromise. These are two concepts which are alien in this part of the world. You negotiate only after you win. What that means is the victor dictates the terms of the surrender to the loser. There's proportional response is weakness. It's understood in this part of the world as weakness, that you don't have the will to do what is necessary to prevent your enemy from hurting you. It's essential that there's no such thing as a proportional response. You use whatever is necessary with overwhelming force to show the other side, to show the Iranians who is boss. The Iranian government is scared. It's unbelievably scared of this right now. And the Iranian people, to the best of my knowledge, are hoping with bated breath that President Trump will do exactly what he said he will.
Harold, let me close with one other key element of this, it seems to me, and we've touched on it a couple of times, but I do want to just say, personally, I believe one of the other things that we need to do as a polity, as a people in this country, if we want to deal successfully with the threat posed to us and our friends and allies by Iran, is to have our disagreements and debate them, of course, but be unified in our opposition against this horrific regime, starting with the elimination of one of its most dangerous elements, Qasem Soleimani. And I, just to put this in the shorthand, it seems to me we need a loyal opposition in America.
What is a loyal opposition? It's not a party with a different name. It's two parties who are devoted to the values of the founding fathers of our country, meaning it's free, democracy, freedom, human rights, inclusiveness. Everybody has a right, whatever, to open his mouth to express what he wants. Unfortunately, what we have, especially in our Congress right now and in our media, is we have an opposition party which doesn't believe in the values of the founding fathers. It calls them a bunch of stupid old white men who are irrelevant. Unfortunately, any country that does not believe in the values of its founding fathers, whatever they are, is not long for this world. We must, I would say the following. Sadly, the Democratic Party, almost all of the people, we don't have the Joe Lieberman senator like we had Joe Lieberman in the past, who you could disagree with, but you knew how much he loved America and the values of the United States.
And it's a good point to close on. Just yesterday, he penned a very important op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in which he really called out his fellow Democrats and urged them to find a measure of bipartisanship at this very, very critical moment. Harold Rode, your insights, your hard work, your analysis are invaluable. I hope that we will be able, as we did in 2019, to call on you frequently in 2020. I wish you again a happy new year. I hope it will be, especially, I think it will be, if your advice is taken by our senior councils of government. Come back to us again soon, sir. I hope the rest of you will do the same again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.